on the bureaus for engaging in conversations with the David Douglas School District to address our critical infrastructure needs relating to school capacity. We have completed our facility plan with the needs of our districts over the next 10 years, which include building two new elementary schools. But we would especially like to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for their collaborative approach in recognizing how population growth can impact school capacity and the district's goal of providing high-quality education opportunities for students now and in the future. The miscellaneous zoning amendment package in the comp plan has given the school district the ability to review and deny 11-plus lot land division applications and zone map amendment applications. We wish to note that these two provisions only give us access to a small portion of potential new housing. There is much more potential new housing in the mixed-use zones and multi-dwelling zones for new apartments that tend to bring higher amounts of new families and children to our schools. Currently, neighborhood associations receive notification when 5 or more unit development is being planned. They receive this notification early in the process. We feel if the school district could receive the same notification from the developer, it would be beneficial for us in a planning process. Currently, we only find out about the buildings because an administrator drives by, sees something being built, and has to stop and ask what's being built and how many bedrooms, etc. I have provided possible language changes to the code 33.120.050 with this testimony. We feel that this is a simple change that could be beneficial to all school districts for planning and of enrollment each year. We're not asking to stop anything being built just to get notification. In addition, there is a change being considered by council in the elimination of this conditional use requirement for indoor agriculture on CE and CM3 zones. There are zoning changes being considered that would increase the amount of CE and CM3 zones in East Portland and David Douglas community. Indoor agricultural includes indoor marijuana grow operations. We are concerned about the indoor marijuana grow operations being close proximity to our current or future schools. Our request is to ensure that the conditional use process is required before any indoor marijuana grow operation is approved or placed. We would like an opportunity to provide input and share our concerns during the conditional use process. Without this conditional use process, we'll have no voice in the placement of these businesses. Please consider keeping in place the conditional use process to ensure our schools and communities have a voice in the future. We would appreciate your consideration on these two items. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
we might be able to look at the marijuana growing process applications in a different process, so we'll check in on that. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. It's a code change, is my understanding.
Right.
Yeah, we've mostly been looking at the retail question, so the grow.
No, we're looking at the grow questions too.
Got into there as well. Okay. Right. Thank you. I hadn't thought about that aspect of
yes,
it,
thank
so
you.
I'm glad you had. All right. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi there. My name is Jim Labby. I'm here today speaking also, we have a Mark Bellow who just asked me to speak for him. We both served on the Title XI Oversight Committee meeting last year, and our testimony is about the need to remove the exemptions, the Title XI exemptions for commercial industrial zones in the process of updating these zoning maps and codes. It's critical that the council consider the impacts of trees when it's as it goes through the zone changes associated with the comp plan, and this is a particularly important piece for a couple of reasons. You might recall that a number of commercial industrial zones were exempt from Title XI when it was adopted in 2011, both because they might potentially limit the capacity of unemployment lands, and employment land supply needs were unknown at that time. I think the first reason was never really justified because Title XI doesn't require tree preservation. There's only an option to pay fee in lieu. And the density standards are really equal to the landscaping requirements in these zones anyway. So there's really very little situations where I can't imagine a situation where Title XI would displace employment land. So But that aside, we know now, with the city's economic opportunities analysis, that there isn't a shortfall in at least in commercial land, commercial employment land. In fact, there's a significant surplus, and I included the page from the economic opportunities analysis that illustrates that. So the other real important reason I would advocate that the council remove these exemptions is, I mean, the original vision was a citywide tree project, and it was intended to develop policy citywide. And in fact, it's exactly the commercial industrial zones and actually the public right-of-ways a lot along these mixed-use corridors where the city is farthest behind in meeting its canopy targets for in the forest management plan. And I included that copy of the Urban Forest Action Plan that illustrates that. And I guess lastly, if you look at Vivek Shanta's research on areas where we have worse heat island effect and the impacts on vulnerable populations in terms of public health, it's in the commercial industrial lands. It's along a lot of our corridors. So I think for all those reasons and probably more, it's time to remove these exemptions and apply the city code, Title 11, citywide. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, take the next three, please.
Next three are Kayuna Floyd, Steve Stranader, I believe is the last name.
Come on up.
And Justina Damasco Hernandez. And they'll be followed by Greg Astley, Jan Britton, and Jackie Strong.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of the Portland City Council. Hello.
Pull that microphone just a little bit towards you. There you go.
My first rodeo here, sorry. My name is Kiana Floyd. I am third generation owner of Amalfi's Restaurant located on Northeast 47th in Fremont. Amalfi's has been a member of the Beaumont Business Association for 30 years. We're very, very strong in our philanthropic efforts, given back to our community, our local schools, nonprofit organizations, and have supported many other community causes and events over the course of the years. For nearly 60 years, Amalfi's has been certainly the cornerstone of our community and of Fremont Street. We came to the Planning Commission as a unified group of 9 property owners to request CM2 zoning for our properties. However, the Neighborhood Association believed that CM1 zoning was better for our properties, and subsequently our request was turned down. And this is a little hard for us to understand, considering just a few doors down east of us, as well as a few doors down west of us, those properties were granted CM2 zoning. And there's just a little small stretch of us, about three blocks, where we were not granted the CM2 zoning. And we know that it's good to listen to all of our neighborhoods, and we know that there's very active and caring people within these neighborhood associations who make their voices heard. But we're here today because we would like our voices to matter as well. The voices of long-term family-owned businesses that have been active in our communities for decades. I know Amalfi's for nearly 60 years that we've been in business, and Stanich's here for nearly 70 years in business. We've certainly given back to our community and created a lot of jobs for people, and we've certainly helped make Fremont the vital place that it is today. So we're just asking that these old guys, Amalfi's and Stanich's, and the small little stretch of 3 blocks be granted the same consideration to grow and prosper as the rest of Fremont and Cully and all the, I'd say, the new kids on the block have been granted and considered. And please accept our request for CM2 zoning.
Thank you for your consideration. Thanks. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Steve Stanich. It's an honor to be here. representing Gladys and George Stanich, who opened up Stanich's in 1949 to pay a large medical bill. From 49 to 66, they worked three jobs, and in 66, went full-time at Stanich's. The reason that I'm here is I guess to represent Gladys and George. I was born and raised in the Beaumont, Wilshire. I guess now we have three zones. It's called Beaumont, Wilshire, Cully, and Rose City. I believed Beaumont, Wilshire, and this is what I grew up on, 33rd is where Wilshire is, and on 57th was the end of it. I believe there was only one association, but that being said, I went to Beaumont grade school, played baseball at Wilshire Little League, and have lived and was raised, as I said, in the area for my entire life. The reason that I'm here is that my parents taught me at a young age they were the original pay it forward. They never advertised, word of mouth. Any money they had put aside for advertising was spent on Little League teams, on high school teams, et cetera. We've had numerous Little League teams over the years since 49. In fact, over 20 years ago, Wilshire Little League field was named George Stanich. Just this summer, I changed it to Gladys and George to honor my mother, who was the cook. My dad was a Fremont philosopher. And was the front guy, but my mom was the person that was making the burgers and allowed them to go from three jobs to one in 1966. I strongly believe that the three blocks from 47th to 50th should be the CM2 zone. We have a cemetery behind us, and I think it would, if anything, it would just be, as Kiana said, there's the same zones to the east and the west of us. And I'm still, I believe, a member of the Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association, which now is Cully and Wilshire Neighborhood. I still live in the area, and I thank you for your time, and thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of my parents.
Thank you. Well, just a speculative question, maybe, but you know, planning and zoning is about what you want to keep and what you want to mm-hmm. change. So, what would you expect to see change as a result of going to CM2 as opposed to leaving it at CM1 with these properties over time?
Well, just the opportunity to maybe go up one more level and have you know, more people living in the area as an option. I'm not certain that we would ever even do it, but if it's to the left and the right, et cetera. But also I was wondering if the council, since we've been doing it since 49 and we have all these Little League teams, we don't go on the food channel because that costs $5,000. We take that and give it to the community. I was wondering if, before you make your decision, if our Little Leaguers from 49 to the present could have a vote.
Wow.
I'm just joking on that.
Well, that Wilshire Little League's still doing quite well, as you know.
Yes,
so.
They went to the World Series last year, and we had a big celebration.
My wife and I met them at the airport when they came back, and that was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Mr. Mayor, doesn't the code provide somewhere that land use planning disputes should be decided in favor of Little League sponsors?
I think there's a special place in land use for Little League sponsors. Thank you very much. All right.
Was there Justina Hernandez here? Okay, then we'll go with Greg Astley, Jan Britton, and Jackie Strong. They're number 14, 15, and 16. Sorry, I haven't been calling the numbers. And they'll be followed by Martha McLennan, Susan Emmons, and Martha Cox. That's 17, 18, and 20.
Okay, welcome. Who'd ever like to
start? Good afternoon. My name is Jan Britton, and I am representing the Woods Creek Homeowners Association in Southwest Portland.
A few weeks ago was the first that we were aware of the planning proposals that would go on in our neighborhood for a addition to a trail. And let's see, I probably, just so you can place it, the notice was given to one of our homeowners at 7525 Southwest 64th Place. The proposal, as we understand it, is to be able to connect various trails that are in pieces, and somehow this little portion of our area was seen as a good place to connect, and we strongly disagree with it. Our Woods Creek development is 31 houses, it's three cul-de-sacs, and the cul-de-sac in question has no through access. The homeowner who received the notice, the trail as it starts goes through their front yard where there's already a fire hydrant and a large multi-use utility box. It's the only way I can describe it. 64th Place itself is a steep street to Woods Creek down to the creek. It's too steep for foot traffic, especially elderly, disabled, or for bicycles. It's obviously slippery when wet and treacherous with ice. Most of the people down in the lower cul-de-sac have to park up on the main road of Canby Street in inclement weather. The street's narrow, so there's really no room for public parking. Street parking would impede flow of residential traffic and be a hindrance to ambulance and fire or rescue vehicles trying to get through. The proposed trail, it goes down from this neighbor's house down to the creek across the bridge and hangs a left, and it goes through a green space that is currently private property of the homeowner association and is bordered by homes on both sides. It completely floods in the winter time, so it would not be safe for hikers going through. We're worried that building trails would cause possible erosion and interfere with the established system of absorption and drainage for that area.
So I think you've used your time. I think you've given us a good picture of this. But the only notice of this that you got was a mailing to the one homeowner?
That was the first we heard about this. This was a couple weeks, well, maybe 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And so it's kind of taken us by surprise, and we were sort of scrambling as to how to proceed from here. So
I should know this, but I know you're in the Woods Creek Homeowners Association,
right?
Which neighborhood association are you in?
To be honest with you, I don't know.
I think it's Ash Creek.
Yeah.
Which is it?
Ash Creek?
Yeah, I think you're Ash
Creek.
All right, we will check up on this, because the fact that you found out so late is kind of concerning to us too. So
okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. All right. Thank you.
Welcome. Whoever would like to go next.
I'll go next. Hello, my name is Jackie Strong. I'm representing the Strong family, and we're a longtime resident of Portland, residents of Portland, and we've been, you know, community activists for a long time. We own a significant piece of property at the corner of Williams and Alberta in the area that's really just turned around as far as growth and, you know, some say has been gentrified. Initially, our property was zoned as CM1. We fought really hard, and we worked with the Planning and Sustainability Commission to be able to get it upgraded to CM2, and we're greatly appreciative of that. All the folks in our block came together, and we all joined, and we advocated for this new zoning to happen. Even the Department of Oregon, who is situated across the street from this property, was in agreement that it should be upzoned to CM2. We have approximately an acre there, which would allow us to be able to do a considerable-sized project there, and we are in the process of trying to develop that property. But in our efforts, we connected with PDC, and PDC had mentioned to us that they have a North-Northeast Economic Initiative program going, which is created to generate wealth for African Americans, especially those that have been displaced by gentrification, and also to just to pay back to the African American communities that have been so wrongly affected by gentrification. Started thinking and thought about, wow, if we could have some entitlements similar to what is happening with all of those buildings that are going up all around us on Williams and Alberta, it would be great. It would create generational wealth for my family. And it would also help us with the developmental process to be able to add some affordable housing for marginalized communities like veterans, for seniors, for African Americans to come back into the community. So we thought about why not come here in front of you and see if you are really serious about the city's efforts to, you know, to combat the ills of gentrification and see whether or not you could, with the stroke of a pen, say, okay, we're going to give you this additional entitlement. So that's the nature of my coming here to testify in front of you today as an African American and a person that's a strong advocate of reversing the ills that have happened to us from a historical perspective. And I trust that you will do the right thing. And thank you so much for your
time. Thank you very much. It's currently proposed as CM1, I assume?
Yes, CM1 is a current proposal, but we are asking for the additional floor.
So that, good. Thank you very much.
CM2, right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, Greg Astley, Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I know that you've received a couple of letters, one from the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies on the drive-through prohibition regarding to safety with bicycle and pedestrian, but also one from the United States Business Leadership Network, which happens to be a national nonprofit. 50 Business Leadership Network affiliates helps business drive performance by leveraging disability inclusion in the workplace and the marketplace. I'm just here to ask to adopt the staff recommendation on the drive-throughs that was talked about previously in April. The drive-throughs are very important to our senior and disabled communities. They provide easy access for both of those communities to important services, which does include food and beverages. And I know that there was a permitting process discussed back in April that we're amenable to, we would like existing restaurants to be able to remodel in the future and not be nonconforming. So I'll leave my comments at that, and I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
The next three are Martha McLennan, Susan Emmons, and Martha Cox. That's 17, 18, and 20, and they'll be followed by Jeff Reese, Gerda Schmidt, and Karen Schmidt, 21 and 22s.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Martha McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives, and I want to speak to the issue of the reduction in the FAR in the Alphabet District. The first thing I want to talk about is just the policy issues. We know that restricting capacity for housing development contributes to heating up the market, which contributes to increased rents and purchase prices. Restricting the capacity in high opportunity neighborhoods contributes to concentrations of poverty. And both of those issues are of serious concern in Portland right now. We need to have more housing in general in the market, and we need to have economically integrated neighborhoods. With that, we can have a healthier city, healthier communities, healthier families. In the particular situation that we are in, we also do have an interest in a site in this neighborhood. It is on 18th between Hoyt and Irving on the east side of the street. Most of that half block is vacant or parking right now. There is a contributing historic resource in that block as well. We do have site control from the owners of that property to see if we can put together a development project there. So that would be our project, not the owner's project, just to be clear on that. When we're looking for a place to site housing, we look at neighborhoods that have the resources that the residents would need. So the walkable neighborhood, the access to services, the access to transit, to downtown, to medical facilities is critically important to us, part of why we were excited about it. When we learned of this proposal in September, it really threw a bit of a wet blanket on us in terms of the capacity to develop that site. What I would say is that the approach that the Neighborhood Association proposed and the partial acceptance of that approach by the planning staff and the Planning Commission lacked nuance. I think the council has the opportunity to look to the process that currently exists through the historic design review to consider properties, keeping in mind that this overlay has existed since 1980 and continued to exist despite the historic district designation in 2000. Other opportunities are to look at property by property instead of the kind of blanket approach that they did, or other adjustments besides just cutting it in half. The 2-to-1 ratio would be infeasible for us, and we would have to withdraw our interest in this site. I know the council last week talked about could we just get in early, and I wanted to say just a couple things about that.
I was just about to ask you about that, so do go on.
And actually, we also, and that gets you to react to another thing as well, maybe Susan as well, and that is it was suggested today that we consider 3-to-1. So maybe react to the get in early and the 3-to-1 notion, if you would.
So the get in early is problematic for a couple of reasons. One, in order to get in early, you have to have a complete packet before the permit application, before the implementation. Because this district is got the historic design review process, the expectation is you need to go through an iterative process in that.
No, you'd grandfathered as soon as you get a complete application. You don't have to have it all done.
But to do a complete application without having first gone through the historic design review process puts you at risk of having to redesign as it's tweaked. So there's an expense associated with that. But probably more important than that is the issue that to get financing for a property on a non-conforming use is also difficult and may be less favorable. We would need to get our not just the permitting in place, but the financing in place and closed, and have those financing partners understand that as soon as the thing is built, it will be non-conforming. And with that non-conforming status, in the event of a catastrophic loss, there's no certainty that it could be rebuilt. So that's the financing partner's concern. So for our purposes, it would be much better to have a clear expectation that a clear and durable expectation of what the capacity of the site is. In terms of the 3-to-1, that's better. We haven't had an opportunity to evaluate that or pencil that specifically. Our belief is that we weren't going to get to the full maximization of the 4-to-1 ratio in any case, that was not going to satisfy the neighborhood or the historic design review. So 3-to-1 has some potential.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
My name is Susan Emmons. I'm the executive director of Northwest Pilot Project. My husband and I have lived in an apartment in Northwest Portland for 36 years, and we raised our twin sons in the neighborhood, Chapman, went to West Sylvan, Lincoln High School. I know I don't need to tell you about the housing crisis, but I'm going to mention the number again, which we keep updating, shortage of 24,000 units in Portland for those who we serve at Northwest Pilot Project, the poorest of the poor. And I think it's very interesting to have a son, an adult son, living somewhere else and come and visit. We put him on a plane yesterday, one of our sons. But his shock, he hadn't been in Portland in 2 years. We usually go to visit him. What has happened in Portland, Mom? There are people sleeping all over the neighborhood. What are you doing about this? Mm-hmm. Why are there so many people out? So I'm here again to talk about the floor area ratio and this proposal to lower it from 4-to-1 to 2-to-1. We were quite thrilled when we met Mark O'Donnell. He expressed his interest and his partner, Tim Ramos's interest in doing some housing, introduced them to Northwest Housing Alternatives. They do beautiful buildings. They'll do a beautiful building that's a beautiful neighbor. And they're going to do it for people who we serve, very, very low-income seniors. So it seems to me, with all that we're dealing with, and we've said we need many different approaches, a private owner making land available, one of our very best nonprofits coming together to do this. And I think the bigger issue of whether it's 3-to-1 or 2-to-1 is this a neighborhood that should have more housing, and should it have more affordable housing? Is compatibility with a historic district really defined by height? My husband and I lived for 2 years in Vienna and a year in Edinburgh, and I would say no. I love Northwest Portland. I don't accuse the neighbors of NIMBYism. That didn't come from us, didn't come from Northwest Housing Alternatives. But I really think this is a significant project. 160 units. I will really, really be disappointed if this project doesn't go through.
So let me just get both of you to comment maybe a little bit further. I see Peggy Moretti is here as well. The council, I think we all are trying to find our way through this dilemma here. Obviously, we've already had one development proposal for this site that was rejected. And it seems to me that we're in an unfortunate situation of being asked to aim a shotgun at an area that would have potentially pernicious effects on historic preservation all over the place in order to address maybe one or two development projects that we might otherwise like. I'm speculating. We're not conducting a land use hearing here. But I don't believe we've done enough as a city in terms of historic preservation. We've had a lot of losses lately, and we're having them every day. You mentioned Vienna and Edinburgh, but it's pretty hard to tear down a historic building in those cities, at least the ones that weren't lost in Vienna and the war. I'm eager for us to do a better job of hanging on to the historic resources that we have. So the 4-to-1 ratio and its potential effect of incentivizing demolition and replacement is what's got at least me worried. Your thoughts about that beyond the boundaries of your property?
So I would comment on that. Again, the 4-to-1 ratio has existed for 36 years, the historic district for 16. I think the development proposal for the site that I have that came through earlier was one that piqued a lot of concern. But I do think there is a way to build sensitively. I mean, the fact that that was not approved through historic design review, that it was not approved by the city council, actually demonstrates that those are good checks on analyzing in a nuanced way, on a site-specific way, what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. So you could take your argument and turn it actually on its heel and say, leave the potential there and then look at the projects on a case-by-case basis through the existing procedures that exist. The council could also ask staff to go back and really look at what the development potential is. Where are sites where there is capacity for housing that could be at above that 2-to-1 ratio that might be good opportunities for development? Our site does have a contributing resource on it. Our proposal is to retain that resource and build around it on the site. So again, kind of a hybrid model of meeting both the historic preservation goals but also the affordable housing goals.
I mean, you have a landmarks commission. You have a checks and balances in place for anybody that comes forward and wants to develop and develop it 4-to-1, and it's fairly arduous. So we don't think that imposing this FAR of 2-to-1 is the solution, since you already have something in place. Yes, I think the concern about historic preservation is real. But I think when we have people sleeping all over our neighborhoods, including this property, I don't see how that's better for the neighborhood and the homeowners and us as a city when we can actually get housing and put people in it. And they are going to preserve the historic building on the property. It will be a beautiful building, and it will be a beautiful it will be a good neighbor. That I promise.
The counter argument to that is that we should set that reasonable expectations, and if you basically can't do it at 4-to-1 because it's not going to fit in, shouldn't we be setting more clear boundaries so that you don't spend a lot of money going through design review, getting to the council, and then being told no and having to start all over again? That doesn't seem to like is helping anybody.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we started this process in the spring. We learned in September that the neighborhood associate had come forward, so there's already been considerable resource and time put into it, and yeah, it just came in on us in midstream. And I think, again, as you know, I mean, we have a dire use for units. I mean, I started my day listening to the receptionist answer the phone to seniors who call in every day trying to get a shelter bed. Not an apartment, a shelter bed. We have seniors living outside. And because my office is right by the receptionist, I hear this call in every morning, and it's very sobering.
Understand. Thank you.
One additional, perhaps random comment. I mean, historically, Portland has been a relatively affordable place to live, and that part of our history is being erased. And to some extent, there is some conflict, hopefully a resolvable conflict, between maintaining the historic character of our historic physical character and maintaining our historic social character.
Good point. Thank you. Appreciate your helping us think through that. Welcome.
Okay. My name is Martha Cox. I'm Chief Executive Officer of Columbia Steel Casting Company, Inc., which is located at 10425 North Bloss Avenue in North Portland. I'm here to testify about the miscellaneous zoning code amendments before you, and in particular, the proposed public recreational trail alignments. I'm here to request that you do not adopt the proposed trail alignment on our site, which is a proposed amendment to zoning map 1924, trail segment 835, and instead adopt a revised alignment which would avoid our operational areas. I've submitted written testimony that explains the request in detail, and before you is a map showing the proposed trail alignment in red and our requested revision in yellow hash marks. Our plant includes a substantial amount of large, complex, and expensive equipment. We rely on internal circulation roadways to move large cast steel parts and other materials around our facility. We maintain large outdoor storage areas and have an electrical substation on our site. The city's proposed trail alignment runs across many of these areas. Construction of the trail in the location noted in red would substantially undermine our trail operations and circulation throughout our site. We're also concerned that the close proximity of the trail to our operational area presents an unacceptable risk of theft and danger to trespassers. We understand that when required, the final alignment would be established through negotiations with the Parks Department. However, having a trail alignment through our operational area in print as a starting point for that negotiation is problematic because it suggests to all parties that the trail should be where it's shown on the map. Also, having this trail routed across an active industrial area creates significant problems if we seek financing or if we ever wish to sell the business or property. Our requested alignment solves many of these problems by placing the trail closer to the slough and away from our operations. At the same time, it avoids most of the designated environmental zoning south of the slough and will provide a better pedestrian experience. We developed this proposal in cooperation with the BPS staff, and in fact, BPS staff developed the compromise alignment before you. We appreciated their willingness to work with us on this issue and sincerely hope you'll support our request. Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like, oh, go ahead.
I was just wondering, do you own the property where it's shown on the yellow?
Yes,
we do. Still on your tax lot, yes.
Yeah, so we'd have to ask somebody else's.
True.
Good. Thank you very much. That's helpful.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The next three are Jeff Reese, Gerda Schmidt, and Karen Schmidt. They'll be followed by Ian McKenzie, Damian Hall, and Deanna Bita. Come on up.
Come on up.
Yeah.
The others are upstairs making their way down. We'll make room for you in a minute.
For those of you who are upstairs, there's some room downstairs now if you wanted to come down if you're going to be called up soon.
We're on numbers 21, 22, and 23.
Right. Progress. Welcome.
Thank you.
Whoever'd like
number
to go
24,
first.
I'm not sure what number you are.
It's all right. Whoever's
25. No, I was 25.
All right, Jamie. All right, got
I'll
it.
Do it.
Democracy in action.
Mayor Hales, members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here on behalf of Joe Angel, who's a property owner of multiple commercial properties in the city. I've submitted some written...
Could you give us your name, please?
Yeah, Damian Hall.
Thank you.
Pardon me. I've submitted some written testimony that touches on a number of topics. There are two site-specific zoning requests, a general opposition to the ban on drive-thrus east of 80th, and expressing concern with the 80% reduction in auto-accommodating zoning that's being proposed. But I'd like to speak to a different issue today here in using my 2 minutes, and that is non-conforming uses. So the mixed-use zones project is, as you know, a large-scale wholesale rezoning of the commercial zones in the city's corridors and centers. There are a lot of good objectives there on how to sort of shape the built environment and new construction and, creating new dense mixed-use zones. But the side effect of that is that, unfortunately, a lot of the existing commercial space that is currently affordable and certainly has rent rates that are less than what new construction would be, that space will be caused to become non-conforming uses. You've heard a little bit today and in various testimony about the impact on property owners and and the businesses that are operating out of buildings that become non-conforming situations. That impacts existing small businesses. The Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation identifies the need to maintain affordable commercial space, and there's even a, I would call it a placeholder for affordable commercial bonus in the commercial zoning, but there's no real clarity on how that is to be achieved. I don't think there's a promise of administrative rules to be created, but not really a framework of those yet. So I think that on one hand, you're trying to create this dense urban environment, and on the other hand, you're trying not to negatively impact the existing businesses and property owners who have invested in these sites that would be inconsistent with the new development you want to see under the code. So I think that there's a simple solution, and that's adding some language to Section 33.130.285, which I've included in the at the end of the letter handed to you. And that would simply say that the mixed-use zones and the new commercial zoning is not intended to create non-conforming uses. So if you're conforming at the day it's adopted, you retain your rights. But if you come in to develop new, you need to develop under the new code. That sort of allows to separate the policy debate about what new development should look like from and separate that from penalizing existing property owners and existing businesses.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hello, members of Portland City Council. My name is Deanna Batar, 9828 East Burnside. I'm actually here today for my father, Bill Batar, who was unable to attend due to a family emergency. So I'm going to read his testimony. I have lived and worked in East Portland for over 50 years. Now we see that the Planning Commission wants to ban all drive-through restaurants because they want to eliminate fast foods east of 80th Avenue, while the rest of the city enjoys this convenience. Is that really fair for the people in East County? How can you stop people from having something they want? Do you remember New York City's Mayor Bloomberg placing a ban on all sugary drinks larger than 16 ounces? The New York Supreme Court ruled against the ban, and now the drinks are back in stores. Let's look at the bigger picture of East Portland. I feel that our elected officials should be concerned about what is happening in East County and not putting their emphasis on fast food drive-thrus. Grocery stores like Safeway and Albertsons have closed. Target at 122nd and Gleason have closed. Why is this happening? The median income is too low to support them. We need a better mix of low income and market rate housing to raise the overall income level. I am sure you have all shopped at Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, and New Seasons. It would be nice to have at least one in our area. You should be finding ways to support and encourage quality food stores to operate in East County. They are the heart of any neighborhood instead of limiting access to fast food restaurants. In closing, our company is losing 19 potential drive-through locations under the proposed new zoning code. Not all of these properties would be workable for a drive-through, but nevertheless, we are losing the drive-through zoning designation. We currently have two fast food restaurants that will be non-conforming if the proposed zoning plan gets adopted. One is at 82nd and Fremont, and the other is at 92nd and Powell. I ask that this council to please retain the current drive-through zoning for these two properties. I have listed their addresses and legal descriptions separately. I strongly object to the new zoning proposals that arbitrarily limit the use of these properties in East County. Again, may I say the residents are entitled to drive-through access here, just as in any other parts of the city. I'm requesting that you do not make any of the proposed drive-through designation changes. Thank you, Bill Batar.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Appreciate you coming, and our regards to him.
Yes, thank you.
Was there a Jeff Reese, Gerda, and Karen Schmidt, and an Ian McKenzie?
Okay. At least one of them.
Okay, and then we'll go with 26 and 27, Lisa Lucas and Erica Yoshida. They're here.
Welcome. Go ahead while they're getting ready.
Hi, my name is Ian McKenzie, and I'm a resident of Northwest Portland. I'm here to oppose any downzoning in the Alphabet District, and in particular the downzoning being requested south of Gleason. I entirely agree with the testimony you've heard from affordable housing advocates. With Portland's first inclusionary zoning ordinance likely to come into effect in February, we should be very careful about removing capacity in opportunity-rich areas. Implementing the comprehensive plan often requires balancing competing policy objectives. Much of the testimony you received in favour of the downzoning was from people who, quite rightly, care about protecting the historic character of the district. I would argue, though, that in this case, capacity for housing and historic preservation are not in conflict. The Alphabet District is very different to other historic districts in Portland, such as Ladd's Addition or Irvington. They're almost exclusively made up of single-family houses. By contrast, in the National Register nomination form, the Alphabet District is described as unique in Portland for its concentration of early 20th century multifamily structures, many of which were designed and constructed by the city's premier architects and developers. I myself live in such a structure, which, although located just outside the boundaries of the historic district, was built during the period of significance by noted architects Clausen and Clausen. It comes in at an FAR that calculated of 3.2 to 1. There are a great number of four- or five-story multifamily buildings in the district, many of which were individually listed on the National Register before the historic district was created in 2000. Most of these come in at an FAR of somewhere between 2 to 1 and 4 to 1. A handful are actually above 4 to 1 and are therefore non-conforming even with the current zoning. Indeed, 29% of contributing historic resources, and that's only the historic resources at Southwark Gleeson, have an FAR above 2 to 1. Clearly, these historic structures are not incompatible with the historic district, so it's not at all obvious to me why we'd need to zone vacant parcels to FAR limits well below what we were building in the early 20th century. As others have noted, the character of the district is protected by the fact that all new buildings in the district go through discretionary review by the Landmarks Commission. Indeed, a project now under construction at Northwest 21st and Irving, which was approved by the HLC with enthusiasm, will have an FAR of 2.96 to 1. So, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Nice job.
Yeah, submit that if you can, too, please.
I emailed it as okay. Testimony.
Good. Thank you very much. Okay.
Is there Lisa Lucas, Erica Yoshida, or Jim Hoy? And we'll also go with Brian Lessler, Zoltan, I believe it's Pewter, and Anthony Calibru.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome.
And Peggy Moretti, Rebecca Biederman, and Susan Lindsay will be next.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Erica Yoshida Watson, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. My family owns commercial land on Markham Hill, located at 836 and 904 Southwest Gibbs, adjacent to OHSU. I'm here today to address our concerns that our property is proposed for downzoning from CS to CM1. As you probably know, there's a tremendous housing shortage on Markham Hill next to OHSU, especially for medical staff, students, patients, and their families. We have carefully been planning for the last several months a mixed-use apartment project that would cater to those needs, both for short and long-term housing needs, with walking distance to OHSU. The proposed zoning change would actually cut our plans in half, which would limit the amount of housing we could provide for those in need, and then also negatively affecting our plans to incorporate affordable housing in the project as well. So we respectfully request for the CS and CM parcels on Markham Hill to be upzoned instead of downzoned to CM2 or 3.
Great. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Brian Lessler, and I'm going to be very brief because I'm here on behalf of the Yoshida family also. And I have submitted some written testimony early this morning, which you probably haven't had a chance to look at yet.
We'll get to it.
Given your load, I know. just a couple of issues I wanted to emphasize, though. With respect to this this neighborhood up there surrounding OHSU, Markham Hill, it's a very special area, and there's about 2,000 residents that live in the Homestead neighborhood, which it is a part of, and about 70% of those by demographics are renters. So it's a sort of bifurcated neighborhood, and I know Commissioner Fritz was very involved with the Markham Hill plan in the past, and this concept of village center, which directs, you know, the concept of living and working and shopping without driving, is directly overlaid within the properties that Yoshida own. And so this down zone, you know, you've heard a lot about affordable housing today. I'm not going to reiterate that. As a commissioner of Home Forward, I am fully aware of the depth of the problem as a developer, I also understand that by constricting the yield out of a piece of property, the ability to cover debt when you have to reduce that that yield becomes very questionable. And so likely no affordable housing other than requirements for inclusionary zoning, which I think can be very positive if there are appropriate incentives for it. But what we really want to see is a CM3 designation on this property to allow a really well-developed project that allows for commercial services as well as both market rate and affordable housing.
How large is the property, roughly?
It's an interesting property. It is going to require street vacation. It's bifurcated by 9th Street, bordered by Southwest Gibbs and Southwest U.S. Veterans. That's a mouthful. Southwest U.S. Veterans Hospital Road. It would in total be about 20,000 square feet with 3,000 street of vacated, 3,000 feet relative to street vacation.
Interesting. Interesting problem in that neighborhood, in that I think it's the only place in the city that actually meets this description, which is obviously there are a lot of places in the city where we can't expand automobile capacity even if we wanted to, right?
Right.
You're one of them. But you're also the other principal mode of transit to Markham Hill is an aerial tram that's also reaching the limits of its capacity. So we have a transit system that can't actually get any bigger,
right?
Which is not the norm. We can add buses or we can upgrade from bus to light rail or whatever, but we can't add extra cars on the tram.
Just a brief response. Allowing a higher density of housing, I think, actually helps to mitigate that problem by eliminating the need for people to commute from off the hill.
Right. If we're trying to shorten commutes, then your point is well taken.
And what was the reason given to you for the choice of CM1?
Well, we've been trying to investigate that. Our sense is that it's really a response to the concerns raised by the Homestead Neighborhood Association, which we're not sure necessarily represents the 70% of the residents that live on the hill.
What was the concern?
Their main concern is traffic and parking. And we think that their limitation, their desire to limit the density there actually works in reverse of their concern.
Yeah, and they've not exactly been anti-growth, but I understand that there may be a different view of the problem there.
So, right. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony.
Is there a Lisa Lucas, a Jim Hoy, or Zoltan Pewter, or Anthony Calibru?
And you already called Susan Lindsay, I think.
And then we'll go with Peggy Moretti.
Come on, Susan, I think you're on. I think wasn't Susan Lindsay
Rebecca Biederman, and then Susan Lindsay, yes.
Oh, sorry, okay. We jumped her ahead of you, Peggy. I hope you don't mind. Go ahead, please, welcome. Yes.
Hi, my name is Zoltia Pinter. I'm in-house counsel with Del Monte Fresh Produce. We have the facility located at 9243 North Rivergate Boulevard, and we trace our business back to the late 1890s, and we've been in Portland since 2000. We have a 52,000 square foot facility wherein we employ 180 to 200 lower class, middle class individuals that work throughout the year. And right now we're here to oppose the additional I-zone overlay on the industrial H-zone. As we see that, it imposes additional restrictions on our property. It will disallow and may affect our operations in the future, what we can do, affecting our property values. And in our view, what's happening is the city is predicting the future today by doing this overlay, which would cause for no, there won't be the ability for changes in the future. And there is no ability to discuss in the future. You're essentially giving up our rights as of today. And it appears that it targets certain businesses, while other businesses, for example, the port, the airport, are not part of this. So for that reason, we oppose the I-zone overlay.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you.
My name's Anthony Calabrese. I'm a 18-year resident of the city of Portland and an employee of Del Monte Fresh Produce. For the last 10 years, I've been driving out to North Portland to go to work every day with a lot of various people. The area that I work in has a lot of buildings that are empty, a lot of places that could be developed. Maybe there's an opportunity for capital investments. And I agree with my associate, Zoltan, that adding additional overlays onto the zone may prohibit more development in the area. Thank you.
Okay, thank you both. Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Let's see if this works. Okay, there we go. Hi, I'm Susan Lindsay. I had the pleasure to be able to be on the PAC or the SAC or whatever it was called for the mixed-use zoning project, and I thought that Barry Manning and Bill Cunningham did a fantastic job. But I'm here today that I've heard that some amendments have been raised or some concern has been raised, and there's a desire to perhaps remove the parking minimums that were set, and I don't think that's a good idea. For one thing, we don't even really know what adequate parking is. I mean, there's never been a really substantial look at this. And what we have, I've noticed that from years of being on different committees, the concern about parking consistently comes up. Now, one thing that I do know is that oftentimes parking is raised as an issue that if we provide more parking, it just gets filled up. Well, one thing I'd like to point out is that the Planning Bureau for many years told us that if we accepted a lot of density in the city, that what would happen was that would be keeping housing affordable. And actually the opposite has taken place, and we have this tremendous crisis around rental affordability that is very disconcerting to many of us who were born in Portland. The first house I ever rented with four other housemates back in 1974 cost $90 a month, and it was on Southeast 6th and Mill. And my first house that I rented on my own was $75 a month. So you can see why I'm concerned. And I haven't noticed that building all of these apartment buildings, many of them that don't have parking, has brought those rents down and created more affordability. So I don't believe that an argument can really be made that if we now eliminate parking from all the new large structures that are being built, that we'll have more affordability. I just don't believe that's true, and I think that's just another giveaway that the city should not do, and we'll lose more livability. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Peggy Moretti or Rebecca Biederman, 32 and 33. And we'll also go with 35, Richard Allen. And they'll be followed by 36, Tamara DeRitter, 37, Marty Suchek, and 38, Donna Bestwick.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Hi. I'm Rebecca Biederman. I'm here about the TSP and the Greenway proposed on Northeast 7th. I've lived in Irvington for almost 11 years. I'm a mom. I have a third grader at Irvington Elementary, and we walk and ride our bikes back and forth through the neighborhood every day. As a parent and a resident in Irvington specifically, I'm concerned about not being involved in the decision about the proposed Greenway on Northeast 7th and what the design would look like and how it would impact the safety of the neighborhood. Opposition to this decision still exists among the residents on both sides of Northeast 7th, as well as the streets that will be impacted by the reduction of traffic on Northeast 7th. Increased congestion on Northeast MLK and Northeast 15th is not optimal. Increased cut-through drivers at increased speed through the Irvington neighborhood and around Irvington Elementary is dangerous. I and other residents would like to be allowed to have our concerns addressed. We would like the design work on this project to proceed with full integration of the residents and the neighborhoods impacted. I would expect multiple meetings offered by PBOT as design work moves forward so that a solution can be designed that is pro-neighborhood. PBOT, we wish, does not move forward with this unless they also have a plan to hold meetings with the public to ensure the many concerns already brought to you in the spring through the public testimony process. I think our major concern is not having a voice as the design process moves forward around the Greenway, and that it was originally between Northeast 7th and Northeast 9th. So I think that's the main concern we have, is having a say in how that integrates into the rest of the neighborhood. Thank you.
So you didn't, there wasn't a process to decide whether it's on 9th or 7th. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I think I don't. We, this in the spring, there was testimony around this. It was seemed like the plan had not, no, it hadn't been chosen to be Northeast 9th or Northeast 7th, but I believe right now Northeast 7th has been designated as the preferred.